Well, the house hasn't changed. We still operate by a shoestring. There we go. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. It's great to see a great crowd. The Hall of Famous Missourians is exactly what it means. We have people, men and women, from all walks of life. I was honored to appoint several this year, and this was a surprise. Speaker Griffin called and said he had a charitable trust of his own and that he was saving some money for some people, and he wanted to honor Governor Hearns. And I thought that was a great idea because Governor Hearns had a special relationship with Southwest Missouri. Not only did he help us with Missouri State University, Missouri Southern, going for a 2-year to 4-year school, he was a frequent guest to Twin Hills Golf and Country Club playing gin rummy. And we like to see him there. He was a great friend, and if Governor Hearns is with us today and ran for any office, I'm sure he would win Southwest Missouri, which is, as you know, has a Republican tint to it. He would probably win by 80 or 90%. He was just very well loved and respected, and he has a great spot in our hearts in Southwest Missouri. And we are honored to do this, and it is now my honor to introduce the great state of Missouri, the Honorable Governor Nixon. Governor Nixon.
Thank you, Speaker Richard. It is always nice to have the First Lady with me today. I appreciate Georgianne being here for this special moment. It's an honor to be here today for the unveiling of the bust of a truly remarkable man, a loving husband and father, a soldier and statesman, a tireless champion of the downtrodden, and Missouri's 46th Governor, Warren Eastman Hearns. The likeness of Governor Hearns by sculptor William J. Williams will be a handsome addition to our historic capital, a place where Governor Hearns fought many campaigns on behalf of the people of the state he loved so well. His story began, of course, in Charleston, where he grew up, where he first discovered politics, and where he fell in love with the devoted wife of more than 60 years, Betty Cooper Hearns. We're delighted and honored to have her with us today to play a key role in this dedication ceremony. Together, Warren and Betty raised 3 daughters, Lee and Julie, who are also with us for the ceremony today, and Lynn, who passed far too soon for all of us less than a year ago. Warren Hearns loved this state, and he dedicated his life to helping it live and grow and prosper. Governor Hearns assumed office as Missouri's chief executive during the turbulent times of the 1960s. He steered the ship of state with a steady hand, guided by an inner compass pointing toward the gleaming shores of justice and equality. He signed the state's first civil rights bill, a public accommodation act sponsored by a young state representative named Mel Carnahan, and strengthened Missouri's anti-discrimination laws. He believed that every Missouri child, rich and poor, black and white, deserved a good education, and that without it, our democracy could not thrive, and he honored that belief with action. From kindergartens to new universities to medical school, vocational schools, and community colleges, they all benefited from Governor Hearns' unflagging commitment to making Missouri a national leader in preparing our children for the future. He worked tirelessly to clean up the Telker Row slum along Highway 62 that long blighted the face of his beloved Charleston. But among his many accomplishments, Governor Hearns may best be remembered as a beacon of hope for those who suffer from mental illness. Because of his personal courage and passionate advocacy, Missouri became a national leader in the diagnosis and treatment of drug addiction, depression, and other mental illnesses. Today, we remain committed to Governor Hearns' vision that all Missourians deserve the opportunity to lead productive, purposeful lives, lives filled with dignity, kindness, and loving support. He and Betty crusaded to bring thousands of good jobs to Missouri, including the Southeast Missouri Correctional Center and one of my favorites, Miranda. And in Southeast Missouri, the governor himself went to Canada and helped secure what has been an icon in the industry and economy of Southeast Missouri. And at a point of life when most folks retired to the sidelines to watch the world go by, he put in 1,000 more hours as director. He put in thousands of more hours as director of the Southeast Missouri Legal Services. In his quiet way, Warren Hearns transformed our state. He made our community stronger and more prosperous, our schools better and more equitable, and quite frankly, our laws more just. He eased the suffering of the most vulnerable and lifted up the downtrodden. He was a quiet man, but an unstoppable force. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. once said, "As life is action and passion, it is required of a man that he should share the passion and action of his time." Although many years have passed since the time Governor Hearns was in office, his legacy of action and compassion endures. From this day forward, every legislator and office holder, every public servant and private citizen who walked the marble corridors of the Hall of Famous Missourians will pass before his measured gaze. Today, this likeness will take its rightful place alongside those who changed the course of Missouri's history and America's history in many realms. President Harry S. Truman, General Omar N. Bradley, Samuel Langhorne Clemens, and educator Susan Elizabeth Blow among those. Warren Hearns was a man who, in rising to meet the challenges of his time, became a leader for the ages. Every governor leaves a mark on this state in tangible and intangible ways. They leave behind them objects and deeds that over the course of time gain eloquence, reminding us of the people who shaped our history and our present. Portraits, photographs, and letters, pieces of furniture and clothing, gardens, parks, libraries, and schools. The First Lady and I are honored to reside in a piece of living history, one that bears the indelible stamp of Governor Hearns. During his 2 terms as governor, he authorized an extensive renovation of the governor's mansion, which I should note, Betty carried it forward with her usual zest, style, and attention to detail. And that historic icon is where it is today because of their combined efforts for our state. Warren was not only a wise governor, also a wise husband. He knew well that once Betty took hold of a project, heaven help anyone who stands in her path. So too, this likeness is a tangible reminder of a wise leader, a good and giving man. But it is the intangibles, the legacy of his enlightened leadership, that is most enduring, that this most enduring monument to the remarkable life of Warren Eastman Hearns will always remind us. A life lived to its fullest and to the very last moment in the service of the people of our great state. It is now my pleasure to introduce another great figure in Missouri history, a man who was the wellspring for and helped establish the Hall of Missourians, but for his leadership at that time and his continued efforts to make sure that proper respect is shown, we would not be where we are today. I'd like to now invite to the podium to make solid remarks about the purpose of that shrine and its past and future importance to our state, former Speaker of the Missouri House, Bob Griffin.
Thank you very much, Governor Nixon, Speaker Richards, Betty, family members, friends, legislators. Some of you are my old colleagues. That's going back a long ways. I appreciate the opportunity of being here today, and I especially want to thank Speaker Richard for welcoming us us to this program and allowing us to make this dedication of this bust. By way of a little bit of history, I have had the privilege and great honor to be involved with the dedication of busts since 1982. And I think that this bust will represent the 33rd of that number. The first four busts were paid for by Missouri Capital Society. And the funds were raised by an annual program of satire that was the brainstorm of former Speaker Ken Rothman and his wife Jerry, because each year they would have this satirical play or skit with plenty of fodder to put out, since they were talking about legislators and government officials. But they raised the money for the first four busts. And since then, those first four busts, I have had the opportunity to raise funds through an annual speakers tournament. And consequently, that has continued on. Speaker Richards has continued that. As a matter of fact, all speakers after me have contributed to the Hall of Famous Missourians by introducing one or more busts of famous Missourians. I'd like to take an opportunity to simply thank some of my old staff, Gail Countryman, for being involved in this, as well as Rob Krause and Laura McAdams to put the program together, and one of my former colleagues, Gracia Backer, that's worked very hard with us and making sure we got Betty up here. Our sculptor is the one that we started with way back then in 1980. It's William J. Williams. He did want to be here today, but he had prior commitments. He lives in the state of Vermont. And as I think you'll find through the unveiling, that he's done once again a tremendous job. But he did want to address some remarks to the group attended. And so I promised him I would read these remarks, if I can see them. He says, "It is a distinct honor and pleasure to once again create a portrait bust for the Hall of Famous Missourians, this of Governor Warren E. Hearns. Creating a portrait bust is a complex endeavor. When working with a person from history, there is first research of biography information and gathering visual materials. All the information then steeps until all images presents itself. A portrait should be a psychological study as well as a physical likeness, a character study presenting essential aspects of personality that create the driving force that motivates and illustrates the individual. It then becomes a process of weaving insight, intuition, and observation into a sculptural image. The portrait then should have the three essential elements: strong cultural qualities, likeness, and personality woven together seamlessly. In my research on Governor Hearns, character traits and personality virtually leapt off the page. He was a natural leader with significant creative implications, possessing the enthusiasm and drive to accomplish many things. He excited at imitating the projects and seeing them through with determination, skill, and personal strength. These attributes, combined with a friendly, good-natured personality, made him one of the most effective and popular governors of the state of Missouri. In creating his portrait, he made my task of determining personality very easy, which is something that doesn't happen very often. When modeling the clay, his image practically made itself. At times, I felt that I was merely along for the ride to completion. In closing, I would like to thank former Speaker Griffin for considering did I say that right? for considering me for the honor, and Betty Hearns and Rob Krause for their participation and collaboration in the making of the portrait bust of Governor Warren Hearns. Thank you all. William J. Williams. Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Gary Krumer of the Historical Society. Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Governor, Mrs. Nixon, Speaker Richard, Mrs. Hearns, the Hearns family, legislators, ladies and gentlemen. I actually decided to change entirely my remarks and abandon what I intended to say and focus on a couple of things the governor said. He used three phrases that struck me as really defining Governor Hearns. One was inner compass, another was beacon of hope, and the other was an unstoppable force. Several years ago, we sat down with Governor Hearns and interviewed him late in his life and asked him to reflect upon things that he valued and treasured and the forces that had shaped him. And I think one of the most important things to remember about Governor Hearns is that he was a child of the Depression. He was born in 1923, and in 1923, as a young child growing up then in the 30s, there wasn't much but hope to rely on. He was tempered by that depression and by watching his father, a merchant and later a county clerk, become engaged in public service. And one of his fondest early memories as a teenager was getting his driver's license and driving people to the polls. I like to think he only drove them to one polling place, and I'm sure he did. There were all these legends about how politics worked in Southeast Missouri. But he remembered that shaped him, that molded him, as did the struggles of the Depression. And he grew up with this inner compass. He knew who he was, and he knew what he stood for. When he came to the legislature, for example, in the 1950s, it's hard for people to remember this, but African Americans who were serving in the legislature, primarily from Kansas City and St. Louis, could not find housing in Jefferson City. They stayed in a dormitory on the Lincoln University campus, and they took their meals in the Lincoln University cafeteria. And so it was with great pride and energy and forcefulness that he supported and signed the first public accommodations law in Missouri history, and that he took a really vigorous force in promoting, for example, the Human Rights Commission, whose membership employees went from 2 to 35 under his reign because he wanted to see those laws supported. He was an unstoppable force. One of my favorite Warren Hearns stories from his early years was, you may know, he got drafted in the early 1940s during World War II, and then he earned an appointment to the United States Military Academy. He graduated from West Point. He served a couple more years. He actually was injured in a softball game and got a medical discharge. But then he wanted to go to law school. And, of course, by this time, he had met Betty Cooper Hearns in a three-week whirlwind courtship that ended in a 61-year marriage. And by the way, he learned to compromise. He once told us that he was raised Methodist, and she was raised Baptist, and she was a Republican, and he was a Democrat. So they agreed that he would give up his religious faith, but she'd have to become a Democrat. I think that was a pretty interesting compromise. But it worked. But what I started to say is that when Warren Hearns decided to go to law school, he also decided in 1950 to run as a state representative from Mississippi County. And he won. And so he comes to Jefferson City, but he's also trying to go to law school. And the dean of the law school told him, you can't work. You can't have an outside job. And not to be stopped, this unstoppable force went directly to the president of the university and persuaded the president that it might be to the advantage of the University of Missouri to have a legislator who was also a law student, especially because at that time, the University of Missouri was trying to establish a medical school. And Warren Hearns became a great advocate of that. He was a beacon of hope to mentally ill, to people suffering from all sorts of discrimination. He was a beacon of hope for education. And I am honored to be here today to represent the State Historical Society of Missouri and to witness the induction of somebody who I think is there's no one more fitting to be included in the Hall of Famous Missourians than our 46th Governor, Warren Eastman Hearns. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Tom.
Next honored guest will be Mrs. Hearns, and before we bring her, let's make sure all your cell phones are off. Remember the rules of the house. I'd hate for Speaker Griffin and I to get our hammer out and break a few phones. So let's honor Governor Hearns and honor Mrs. Hearns and turn off your cell phones and listen to the lady. Mrs. Hearns.
Thank you very much. I hope it was not my cell phone. I had mine off. But Governor Nixon and Speaker Richards, members of the House of Representatives, former Speaker Griffin, and friends. Friends and enemies, but not too many. The years have gone by. I thank you for this tribute that you bestowed upon Warren this morning. To be recognized by your peers is an honor and one that we were thrilled to hear. I could give you a lot of stories about the House of Representatives and Warren's life here. And I guess the speaker did give me the microphone, but I won't do that, Speaker. I won't do that. I won't tell you all the stories that I know. I think I have to say this to you. About 62 years ago, there was a skinny guy. Now, he didn't stay skinny, but he was a skinny guy when he came in to the legislature. And we both came to the Capitol that day. First of all, we had to find where the bathrooms were, and we had to find the chamber, because Warren had been overseas for a long time. But we managed to see the beauty of the House of Representatives, and that skinny young man just took it upon himself. He said, I can work here. I can win the election, and then I can work. It was a long drive at that time from Charleston. It's still a long drive, believe me. It took us a long time to get here all the time. But 62 years went by very quickly. That election began a journey of public service that would take the gentleman from Mississippi from the House of Representatives to the Secretary of State's office, and finally to the 8 years, not finally, Governor, because that was tough, but to 8 years in the Governor's office. My daughters, Lynn and Julie, and Lee and I shared with him every moment because he saw to that. This recognition today is special to me. The Hall of Famous Missourians was created to recognize those who had made outstanding contributions to Missouri. Now Warren didn't run for positions simply to enjoy the splendor of office. In fact, there were lots of times I thought he could have enjoyed some splendor, but he just passed it by. He truly wanted to and ultimately did make a difference in the lives of many Missourians. As you know, I could stand here and tell you stories and some that you don't need to hear, but I won't. But there's one story I would like to leave with you today. It tells me of Warren's public service and his dedication to this particular institution in which I'm standing. I cannot tell you the love he had for the House of Representatives. I think he was always happier right here because he thought if he was a floor leader, he could boss it. And I always thought he liked that the best. But there is a story told about an enemy of Warren's. And when I say enemy, he was same party, but he was an enemy. But he told the story many times about Warren Hearns as a floor leader, especially as a legislator, I'm going to get the word out in a minute, were a new one. And they said that the legislator would get in trouble with his bill. And Warren, who sat, the skinny little man at the bat, he would sit there a while and watch the man get his bill loved to death, as you know can happen. And then he'd get up, he had a quiet voice, and he'd pass his bill. Now, most of the time, the sponsor of the bill didn't even know what happened. And Warren didn't tell him. Warren's non-friend, though, said, who was of that same party, by the way, and the way he acted, respected his leadership and his ability to solve a problem without trumpet and fanfare. And that was Warren Hearns. He was a man of his word. If I could say anything today, if I could say for you to remember something, I would say to you, he was a man of his word, and his word was his honor, and he never changed his mind, and you know that. He did not distinguish between the rich or the poor, the city or the rural, the healthy or the sick. He simply did what needed to be done to help all Missourians. I want to say on a personal note that I'm honored to be back in this House chamber. I lived here 10 years happily after I left the House, and as many of you will experience, after you leave the House, you will still be reviewed as a public servant. You will still receive requests in the middle of the night for help. Somebody needs gas. Somebody needs money. Somebody needs something. And I'm proud to be still considered as someone who can help. Let me close in this. Warren and I committed our lives to the state. I was committed to him all the way, and he was to me. I know I can speak for him as I am for myself today. I don't want you to think we always agreed, because we didn't. There were some questions in the house on the hill that we probably, you could have heard the discussion. But we don't regret one single minute of what we did during our service in Missouri. And I learned a long time ago, and I learned it from him. Always make the decision and weigh the words and the facts, and then make the decision and don't look back. He told me to do that, Dad. Because, you know, what ifs, that's a lot. And could have beens are just that, lad. On behalf of the gentleman from Mississippi and I, the lady from Mississippi, I deeply thank you for this honor and the time you have given to the Herm family this morning. Thank you very, very much.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Governor, do we have anything, any business we need to do? We need to pass some pro-job stuff, maybe to throw some stuff out of the house?
Well, I think at this particular setting, getting done quickly today would be important. But I do think that perhaps we should unveil the beautiful rendition of a truly great Missouri leader.